Welcome back, nerds, to another episode of Two Nerdy Dads. This is episode 9, and with me, as always, is Jason Applegate. Say hey, Jason.
Hey, how's everybody doing?
Well, we got a lot on our plate today, but to start, we unfortunately have to start on a little somber note, so I'll let Jason take it.
Yeah, well, I'm sure everybody knows that Robin Williams passed away. And it was a shocking news to everybody, especially the way in which he left us. I had known that he had struggled with drugs and depression in the past, but whenever you see his performances, you know, it's sort of unfathomable that this is a man who's struggling with depression. And so then when this, when it came across that he had committed suicide, I think everybody was extremely shocked. So I thought we'd take a little bit of time and reflect back on some of what we admired about Robin Williams. It could be a favorite movie or just something, you know, in general. So what do you think, Jimmy? What comes to mind first and foremost? We kind of grew up with Robin Williams as a big part of our childhood. What stands out to you?
We definitely did. And growing up, my sister's name's Mindy. So I was always referred to, well, then this must be Mork. Now, obviously, that was early 80s, and I haven't heard that in a long time, but I vaguely remember that, being called Mork and being like, what? What is Mork? I don't understand.
Yeah.
You know, as I got older, I understood what they were talking about. But that, in a general reference, was one. But the other one is definitely his work with Christopher Reeve and Christopher Reeve's foundation. And all the things he did with the accident, how he helped lift the spirits of Superman. Superman was at his darkest time, in my mind, and there was Robin Williams there to heal. And that, to me, was just amazing that he could do that. And obviously, if you know their history together, Juilliard, it's just that much more special. And to lose all the work he did for the Christopher Reeve Foundation is a saddening, apart from everything else, that hit me hard, that they not only have they lost their ambassador, Christopher Reeve, and his wife because of breast cancer, but now they lost another one with Robin Williams, and that, to me, was very sad.
That is sad. Yeah, absolutely. I had not realized he was so instrumental in that. What comes to mind for me with regards to his sort of service to mankind and his big heart that everybody, you know, has tweeted and, you know, said about him is his overseas with the troops, you know, entertaining the troops, and he, you know, almost was like our generation's Bob Hope in that way.
Yeah, and I remember recently seeing a clip of him with the USO doing some stuff, and it's just, exactly, and that's huge, because I don't think a lot of people give recognition to the people who, the entertainers who go and do that, because there's not much accolade for it, but it's a huge, important part.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely is.
So of all his films, what would you say is your favorite?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you the same thing, but I'll jump on it. I have to say that my favorite is Dead Poets Society. Some of you may or may not know that I am an English teacher. And so, basically, if you watch that movie, it encapsulates why every English teacher loves speaking English. I'm not going to go as far as to say it. You know, caused me to become an English teacher by any means, but it certainly does encapsulate why I love to do what I do. The "Oh Captain, My Captain," you know, scene you still get the chills from that. So I'd have to say that one. And then the other one, of course, is Aladdin. You know, as the genie, I think that's just you know, from our generation especially, a classic performance. And I know I saw a lot of sort of rest in peace, you know, postings that included him as the genie.
Yeah, you're free now, genie.
Yeah. Oh, that one was pretty. Yeah, heart wrenching. Definitely.
Yeah.
That "No Captain, My Captain." So it was nice to see that. But I mean, he touched so many generations. I was talking to somebody else, and they were like, "Oh, Flubber." You know, and I'm like, really? Flubber? But they love Flubber. And it's like, that's
totally forgot
for
about
you.
That movie, too.
Yeah. Yeah. So, how about you? What one stands out to you?
I think my favorite is his. And it's his performance, partly. It's the co-star's performance and the director. Mm-hmm. They come together perfect because I love all of them. It's The Fisher King. I love Terry Gilliam. I absolutely love Jeff Bridges and obviously Robin Williams. And that's the way he plays the character who goes basically insane because of events that he had nothing to do with. I mean, he was involved, but he did not start them. He didn't have anything to do with it. His downward spiral is just amazing. And once again, his acting in that, and I don't think he got enough kudos for it. But I love that movie. And the other one I would say, because it touched me deeply as far as the content and the time it came out, would be Good Will Hunting. I know that's an obvious one, but I think that's sort of one for our generation where it was like, man, that is a great film. Sort of a, they got this film made by, without much help. And that's Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. And then to recruit Robin Williams to be the psychiatrist in that. And he's so low key. And that is not who Robin Williams is. And that just shows what an amazing actor he is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a really, really good point to point out the range of performances that he had. A lot of times we forget that because we just think of Robin Williams, the comedian, but he really had quite a versatile range, which is...
Yeah. And probably the best one that shows that example is Good Morning Vietnam. I mean, he goes from being the manic radio DJ to, this guy who's trying to help people in the Vietnamese and the heartbreaking what happens, and he's just so, it's all over the place, his emotions.
Yeah, absolutely. That was one of my top ones, too, and I was contemplating between that one and Aladdin. And, definitely another good one. So if any of our listeners haven't seen Dead Poets Society or Good Morning Vietnam, go check that stuff out, man, because it's good stuff. Good storytelling, good
acting. It's amazing. And let us know what you got. What's your favorite Robin Williams film?
Absolutely.
Because they're listening to people and seeing it on Facebook. There are some I completely forgotten.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that was a great film. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but the one with him and Kurt Russell way back in the day where they were high school football players.
Oh, my gosh, right? And he's the receiver with the glasses?
Yeah. And I was like, oh, what a great film.
I had forgotten about that one, too.
Good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he will definitely be missed. Rest in peace, Robin Williams.
Yes, very much so.
So, moving on to something that was one of the reasons why it's been a while since we've done our last podcast, San Diego Comic-Con. You got to go. I got to be extremely jealous yet again. But it looks like you guys had a lot of fun. Maybe just recap, top two or three things with regards to this experience for you this year?
Let me just say, if you haven't been to San Diego Comic-Con, I think it's like standing in the middle of a hurricane. It's amazing to watch, but you're going to get beat up because there are so many things going on. There are so many people there. I think it's like 400,000 people, and I think you run into every single one of them. It's unbelievable the things you see, and it's everybody... Everybody's like-minded. Yeah, you might not agree on what's the most nerdy thing or what your favorite thing is, but it's a world where you can talk about the most almost amazing thing. You can talk about something that nobody else would know in the world, and all of a sudden you're talking to somebody who understands what you're saying because they are a like-minded nerd. They can be abstract. Like, nobody else would know, and they will understand. And it's like, oh, man, what a great place to be, and it's cool to have those conversations. Everybody, tons of people cosplay, which is really exciting. I am not personally a cosplayer, but it's exciting to see the other people that really get into it and really go to town with their costumes, really spend a lot of time and money on it. That is very cool. We're going to have a segment soon coming out on Nerd Locker where Brandon and Cubby dressed up like the girls from Bob's Burgers, and they went around and interviewed, they're ugly skin, but they interviewed
them,
other cosplayers, and it's great to hear what they have to say. But specifically to the con, I will start with a couple of disappointments. I was a little disappointed in Marvel and DC. I thought the news that they came out with was lame. And I compared it to last year where Marvel came out with, we're going to have Ant-Man. Here's the name of the title of the Thor movie. here's right. the Avengers Age of Ultron. You're like, oh my God, this is all happening. Awesome. And this year, there was nothing. There was really no new news. And it was disappointing because, as you and I discussed leading up to it, they were announcing Lady Thor. They were announcing Falcon taking over as Captain America. A new path for Iron Man. And like, well, why did you announce that beforehand? Because your news at Comic-Con was really lame.
So yeah, it lacked the theatrics, right? I mean, I remember from last year. Was it last year that was that when Loki had his big, you know, theatrical entrance and Say My Name, or was that the year before?
I hate to admit this, they all kind of blur together now.
I bet they do for you. I thought that was last. I thought that was last year, but maybe
that could be
the year before. And then the Batman versus Superman announcement was the same. That was the same year. So
that was the other thing I was going to say. Last year, we were just walking around, and we just happened to be at the DC booth waiting to interview. Maybe with Scott Snyder. I don't remember. And all of a sudden, we get the news that Batman versus Superman coming out, and that's all it was. They had a symbol. Superman with the Batman mixed together. You're like, awesome. It wasn't called Dawn of Justice yet. We had no clue what this was going to be, and it was just like, that is amazing. Oh, my God. And this was fresh on the heels of the release of Man of Steel, so it was unbelievable. And then this year, we get the reveal of Wonder Woman's costume, and it's like, wow. That's kind of lame. So
that underwhelming
is
a good word for it.
They did show some footage, and I'm still confused, and maybe I'm the only one, but they showed some footage from Dawn of Justice, and I don't understand how Man of Steel is sort of the first revelation that there are superheroes in this world. How far ahead are we skipping to Dawn of Justice, where we have Batman, who's aged, and he's in a costume that looks a lot like Dark Knight Returns, fighting Superman? And I'm like,
I don't know what.
Are we going to explain this gap here? Because if it's taking place like right after Man of Steel, I have no clue what their plan is. I don't get that. But if it's further in the future, then I'm like, okay, are you going to then tell what happened in the middle between Man of Steel and Dawn of Justice? I'm not sure.
Well, I'm wondering if it's just hypothesizing here. Uh-huh. Maybe they're referring to it as like the first superhuman. And so Batman's kind of been doing what he's been doing. And you know how Batman's storyline is. He's always sort of a myth, you know?
Yeah.
He's a folktale. People don't really confirm whether he's real or not. And we saw that in the New 52 with Justice League, where Green Lantern and Flash run into Batman, and they're like, he does exist, you know? Oh, my gosh. So,
that's true.
I don't know, maybe that way? That's all I can consider.
That could be. But, so I was a little disappointed with the big guns that were their announcements. But the exciting one for me was the footage for Mad Max. I'm a huge Mad Max fan. I think Road Warrior is one of the best action flicks ever made. I felt so bad for George Miller when his producing partner died on the third one, and basically he didn't really direct it. He directed some of the action sequences, like the last scene with the train escape, but other than that, he really didn't direct it, and you can tell. Beyond the Thunderdome was entertaining, but it wasn't as good.
Not on the same level.
Man, the footage looks amazing. I cannot wait to see it. I love the actors. I'm not the biggest Charlize Theron fan, but seeing her in that head shave, she looks like a badass. I'm excited to see this. I really can't wait.
Good. Sounds good.
Yeah, the other one I would say that I was pretty excited was the Assassin's Creed Unity. They had set up a force there. And we got to play a little demo of the game, and it is amazing. I'm not the biggest gamer in the world, but seeing this next-gen consoles, which are, I guess, now called current-gen consoles that are already out, they are amazing. The graphics are unreal. This game and the way they use artificial intelligence is just unbelievable. I can't wait to play the full game. It's just unreal. And then, of course, Brandon ran the parkour course, and failed miserably. He is pathetic. I can't wait for people to see that footage too. He tripped on like the very first thing, and it was like, oh my God. And luckily Cubby was announcing his run and Howard Cosell style was very, very comical. Yeah,
that sounds great.
Bad. And then the other with Zachary Levi, they had sort of rented out portions of Petco where the San Diego Padres play. And I got to play old school video games like Galaga and Centipede, which I love. We got to talk to one of the creators of Robot Chicken and actually watch him animate the show, and he used the Nintendo Power Glove, of all things, as his remote control. Huh. I was so thrilled to see that. And once again, we got to play a demo, which was Alien Isolation. It's a new game coming out, which takes the Alien franchise in a new direction. They used some of the original graphics from Alien, which is awesome, some of the original voices from Alien. It's the story of Ripley's daughter visiting the ship that now, obviously, Ripley's not there, but the alien is still there, and she's the scavenger trying to find out where her mom went on the offices that she's, you know, scavenging the ship for parts. So that was as scary as all get-out game. Really scary. I can't wait to play that one, too. But, yeah, that's cool. Pretty much the high and the low of Comic-Con this year.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would imagine just being with Tubby and Brandon for that amount of time would be both hysterical and probably exhausting.
Definitely. We tried something new this year. Last year, and tried really hard to get a bunch of interviews for everybody, our fans, and try to show the exclusive. And we found that we were really missing out on being at Comic-Con. We weren't getting that first-person view of Comic-Con. And we know there's a ton of other sites where people can get their information on the newest releases and what's going on. So we're like, you know, let's try something different. So Brandon walked around with a GoPro and was basically interviewing himself, and we would talk in the background on what was going on. And I think that was cool. I think people got a first-hand look at Comic-Con.
Like what it's like to be there without being there. Yeah.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
is a cool idea. Yeah, that is a cool idea. And I think you're kind of right. I mean, it's almost sort of, the coverage is super saturated in a way. There's just so much of it that it's like, well, are you going to really break anything? No, not really. But I do have to admit, some of the interviews, like the one with Scott Snyder's great. It's nice to see some of those things. But I kind of liked what you guys, that sounds really cool what you did. Give that first-hand experience. So, and then speaking of cons, you guys have, I think somebody's going to cover Wizard World coming up too, just to kind of give our listeners a heads up as to what to expect down the pipeline.
We are definitely trying to expand our con coverage, so that's Nerd Central, no matter which city it's in, and now almost every major city has one. We've done, obviously, Motor City with you. We did Awesome Con in D.C. God, we've done so many, I can't remember. But now, this year, the first year we're going to do in Chicago. We have two writers going, Nick Buck and Whitney Hay. So I'm really excited to see what they come out with. Whitney is huge into Doctor Who and Star Trek, which I personally am not. So I'm really excited to see her coverage, and all the fans can now get that side of things. So
there's
excited.
A ton of guests there, too. Like, I know a lot of them are Doctor Who because the 12th Doctor, Matt Smith, is going to be there. And I can't remember her name, but Amy Pond. She plays Amy Pond. And she was also just in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, right.
Played Nebula, I think is her name, in Guardians of the Galaxy, which is the next thing we're gonna get to. Because that's the other thing we haven't talked about since our last podcast, which is Guardians of the Galaxy. It's been hugely, hugely successful. Have you seen it?
Ironically, just like our last podcast, which was before the release of Guardians of the Galaxy, I have not seen it.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Well,
I know. You can say whatever you want. Cause
I'm not going to spoil
it. You ruined
anything.
It for me. No, he already ruined it for me.
Oh, it's already ruined?
I know what the ending is with the singer and a certain George Lucas production makes an appearance.
Yeah.
It's funny to me, but we can definitely talk about it because Brandon is here.
That's too bad. But, you know, it is hard to kind of keep that to yourself.
It is.
You know?
It is. And it's hard because I edit videos and stuff, and he has to do a review, and he has to talk about it. So I totally understand. I'm joking about Brandon. But I've just heard amazing. I really can't think of one negative review I've seen or heard. So I'm pretty excited about this.
Well, yeah, it's highly entertaining. It's very amusing. It is, it's actually fairly kid-friendly. I did take both my kids to see it, 10 and 7. So, there was...
Now, it says PG-13. Is that accurate?
No, I think it is accurate, but you know how those things are. I mean, some PG-13s are, like, you know, closer to R, and some are a little closer to PG. I do admit there's some violence with regard to one of the Infinity Stones where you know, people kind of like explode sort of a thing. And so Sabrina did cover her eyes for that part. So, yeah, if she needs psychiatric help later, then, yeah, maybe it was a bad decision. But I didn't think it was as bad as some of the other Marvel movies. Certainly wasn't as bad as Iron Man 3. Wasn't as bad, or was on par, I would say, with Avengers. So, and okay. Avengers was rated PG-13. So, again, I think, like we always say, hey, see it first, you know, which, yeah. you know, you should. See it first, and then determine your own, you know, what your kids can handle and not handle. So,
sure.
But they enjoyed it. They even, we even got a chance to see it a second time with the grandparents. So,
oh, cool.
They liked it. Yeah, they it's funny, it's action-packed, and it's just a good all-around movie. You can tell they're having a good time. It's well-written, and I'm still sort of wavering. I think it might even be better than Avengers. I think it might be the best Marvel movie that they've done. I'm wavering a little bit. I don't know if I can go as far as to say that, but I know it's definitely in the conversation. And the only negative criticism I have actually heard, and I have heard some, and that is with one particular scene and line in it. And it was when Drax is, towards the end, Drax is sort of saying that he's glad he's friends with everybody. And it's this very sort of humorous, because he's bad at giving compliments thing.
Uh-huh.
And he's being very literal, because that's another running joke with Drax, that he doesn't understand figurative language, so metaphors and things like that. And it becomes a funny joke throughout the movie, and then towards the end, he, you know, says, "You big dumb tree, I'm glad that I'm your friend." So he says these very literal things that he thinks about that person, and it's amusing, but then he gets to Gamora, and he calls her a whore. And so some people took issue with that and thought, well, here's just another example of misogynistic bad writing. Best article I saw on it was really interesting, and I think it's the one that raised all of the issue, and that was she was saying, hey, it's not just a feminist thing here. It's actually bad writing, because here you have this character who thinks completely literally, and yet he's using a metaphor, because she's not literally a prostitute, you know? She isn't literally a promiscuous woman. So why would he use that phrase towards her and call her that? And so she just thought it was just kind of lazy writing, but she was also making a point about sometimes our lazy writing is stereotypical, you know, and misogynistic. Yeah. And then there was a bunch of follow-up with it, which basically was criticizing James Gunn for downplaying the female screenwriter, whose name I do not know, so I apologize about that off the top of my head. But there was a female screenwriter who was a big part of getting the movie greenlit, sorry, bad English there. But she he downplayed her and even sort of, I don't have a quote from him, so I don't want to go too far to say exactly what he said, but a lot of people thought that he wasn't giving her enough credit. I guess it's the best way to come around it. But, you know, other than that, I mean, as far as of an entertaining film and the fans loving it and people who don't even know who Groot is loving it,
yeah,
and, you know, I don't think it could be more successful.
That's
so
awesome.
Pretty good.
It's really interesting. I'm a comic book guy, and I don't know much about Guardians of the Galaxy. So to see its popularity, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, it really has been, and I just had this gut feeling that I was like, this could be, because it's such a unique niche for a superhero movie, you know, to set it in space, this is what Green Lantern should have been in some way. Guardians of the Galaxy. People who made Green Lantern should look at Guardians and say, wow, we screwed up. okay, that's my thoughts on it.
Cool.
Should we move on to our next topic then?
Sure.
Cool. Our next one is one you and I have been meaning to get to again and again and again and again, and we keep putting it on the back burner because we run out of time. But now we do have some time to talk about it, and that is Star Wars. And as parents, what order do you show your child the Star Wars movie? Do you show it to them 1 through 6, or do you do it 77 through 2000, whatever, right? Do you do it 4, 6, and then jump back to 1, 2, 3? And we posed this to some of our listeners and followers and got their feedback on it, too. So I want to start with you, though, Jimmy. What would you do, what did you do when it came to Star Wars?
Well, let me start by saying, as a film major, I have always been fascinated with the idea that people who grew up watching 4, 5, and 6 first, because that's the way it was, the story completely changed for them when 1, 2, and 3 came out.
Mm-hmm.
In that we were watching Luke Skywalker's story, and then all of a sudden when it became a 6-parter, it was now Anakin Skywalker's story.
Right.
And I was always wanting to do a sociology experiment in film in how new generations who only saw it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 would take the film.
Mm-hmm.
I was not in film school long enough to really delve into this. I mean, I finished film school, but the films hadn't completely come out. The closest I got was younger people who started with one enjoyed that far more than they did our trilogy, meaning the older trilogy. They just liked special effects and all that more, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, with my son and my daughter, but mainly my son because he was first and got to see him, I started with 4. 4 is Star Wars, as I will always refer to it, is my favorite film of all time. I think A New Hope stands alone. It is amazing. It totally changed cinema when it came out in 1977. You can't deny that. And the way they made films, the way they showed films, the way people got excited about films, the way they merchandised films, everything changed when that movie came out. And I think A New Hope is my favorite film. I think it's one of the best films ever made. I think, though, when then you get to Empire, it's a little sketchy because it's a scarier movie, and if you're showing it to a child, I think it's a little scarier. I will say, though, that I watched them 4, 5, and 6, and I have no knowledge of being scared of it. I didn't understand a lot of things, and when I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's Darth Vader's son, Boba Fett. Boba Fett's related to Darth Vader. That's kind of how I took it. And there's a lot in there, particularly, which is, Boba Fett says he's no good to me dead. And I guess as a kid, I had hearing problems. I always heard that he's no good to me, Dad. So, yeah. But obviously, growing up, I now know the whole movie and can memorize, can regurgitate it for you. And then obviously, Return of the Jedi, I think, is a very kid-friendly movie. Yeah, there's death and destruction, but I think with the Ewoks, sort of makes it a little better, a little easier. But I had no problem showing James 1. To a lesser extent, 2, I think that's still a little scary. 3 is the big one. That's the one I think that everyone can agree is, do you show your kids, or what age do you show your kids? That's a tough one. I don't remember if I mentioned this before as a parenting fail, but this was Allison, not me. She had James watching Revenge of the Sith, which we've done. And we sort of cut it off when it gets to the point where Anakin's getting burned. And Allison left the room and forgot, and James saw it and freaked out, was really scared, and did not like it at all. I totally understand. And again, that is my wife, Allison Marie Davis.
Way to throw her under the bus, everybody.
Don't blame me. That was not me. I get yelled at the bench all the time. But I would say I would love for my kids to have gone 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But at heart, and that's from a storytelling point of view, a filmmaker's point of view, but from a fan who just loves the movies, I couldn't do it. I went 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3.
See, from a literary standpoint, which is how I view them, you know, and how I usually look at films is as literature, you know, is I think you have to go story-wise. I think 4, 5, 6 have to be first. Only because 1, 2, 3, they reference so many things in 4, 5, 6 that you don't get. You know, there's all these little Easter egg type of things that you just wouldn't understand. Like, for example, when the young Anakin in episode 1 has this half put together C-3PO. And we all know who that is. And we're like, oh my gosh, Darth Vader made C-3PO? How crazy is that? Now, some of it, of course, we rolled our eyes at. Some of the little, you know, Easter egg kind of things. You know, for example, the Metachlorians and things like that. But I think just overall, as a story, it's more interesting to watch it 4, 5, 6. One, because 4, 5, 6 is the classic hero story, you know?
Yeah.
That's the building's Roman, it's Luke Skywalker going out and becoming a Jedi, which is a metaphor for becoming a man, for becoming who he's going to be. And I think that's a great story. And then 1, 2, 3 is about a fall. It's about a, you know, someone who falls from grace. It's a tragedy. And, you know, I get a lot of criticism because I give a lot of criticism to 1, 2, 3. But one of the reasons that I am not a huge fan of 1, 2, 3 is I don't feel they sell the tragedy that much. Yeah. I don't feel that you have a catharsis for Darth Vader. And I think that was a huge weakness in the storytelling. But, hey, they're entertaining. They're fun. I agree with you about showing 3. I think it's the only one of the 6 movies that's PG-13.
I think it's
that for a reason. Yeah.
They didn't have that system when Empire came out. So I think that one might have been PG-13. But, but by far, I think you're going to need this. It's the worst when it comes to when can you show a kid that, because that Anakin getting burned is pretty horrific.
Yeah, losing his legs and being all burned up, it's pretty bad. Yeah, I agree with you there. One of our listeners suggested, and I thought this was interesting, showing it 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So really making a quite a marathon about it. But then getting the whole encapsulation, like, okay, now remember all these things from 1, 2, 3, look at how they transfer over to 4, 5, 6. So I thought that was sort of interesting, but I still agreed with him that 4, 5, 6, I just feel they just need to be first. I just feel that story-wise, they need to be first. And I'm not cutting on anybody that likes 1, 2, and 3. I think that's great. I think you hit a good point, that if that's what you grew up with, if you're a young person and you saw those movies first, then of course you're going to like them better, you know? And one day you and I will be the old crudgy men that are like, you know? And that's okay. That's all right. Maybe we're already on our way there. I don't know.
I was like, one day, Jason, I think we're there, man.
In some ways, I do believe that we are. Yeah, absolutely.
But so, I will say, even though that's the order I have shown my son and daughter,
yeah,
the ones they choose to watch more frequently, when asked, "Hey, what do you guys want to watch?" It's always 1 or 2. It's never one of my choices. It's 1 or 2. So, I think kids just dig as much as we rip on Jar Jar Binks. I think they like Jar Jar Binks. I think they like seeing Jake Lloyd, the little Anakin Skywalker. I think they like seeing him.
They identify,
relate to that a little more than you know when we were growing up. It was I don't know why. I was always Obi-Wan. I was never Luke. I don't know why. I got blonde hair and all that. But I always related to Obi-Wan. And I thought that was just awesome to be Obi-Wan. But I think kids, they're younger people. And Natalie Portman obviously is younger than that, too. So kids think, like, oh, I can be a princess or, you know, I can be a Jedi. Cool.
Yeah, I think it's shinier. I think that's a big part of it, too, you know. And think about some of the stuff that we liked as kids, you know. and we look at it now and we're like, oh, yeah, that was not really very good at all.
And it's true, because I think the point that we like now more as adults is, you know, the fact that I don't remember being a kid and being shocked when Darth Vader reveals, "I am your father," to Luke. And that's a huge twist, one of the biggest twists in movie history, and it's not a twist anymore because you already know that 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. There
but
was
that's
some
amazing point.
I saw a Facebook video some dad had done where he and his child was, like, really so young that I even questioned him showing Empire, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that little of a kid. And so they had no idea. And he had shown it to him 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they hadn't gotten to 6. But in 5, in Empire, when Darth Vader reveals, "I'm your father," this kid lost it. Just completely flipped out. Well, just like, oh, my gosh, no, it can't be. You know, it was like this, it was kind of a neat experience. I think it was unique. I think it was only because he was so young, because I think if you pay attention to 1, 2, And maybe he didn't. I'm sort of hopeful that he didn't show his son 3 because we talked about it being so violent, and so it doesn't have the giveaway that Anakin becomes Darth Vader at the very end when they put the mask on him.
And they name the kids, though. This one's Luke, this one's Leia.
Yeah, exactly. So either that went over the child's head, which is also very possible because the child was so young, or hopefully the father didn't even show the child 3, and so he had no idea. But it was kind of a cool experience to see the child react to that revelation, where I think you're right. I think you and I, we grew up with Star Wars, and we were, 5 when Empire came out? So we usually saw... Yeah. Oh, no, we were 5 when Jedi came out. And so we saw these movies typically on VHS. And so we kind of, watched them all together. You know, I agree with you. I think I just always knew that Darth Vader was Luke's father.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that there's no wrong way to show your kids Star Wars. I think that's ultimately what we can come
Not
to
at all. But even if you start with, the Clone Wars, the animated series, or you go back to the Ewok Adventure or Droids, hey, you're getting them in Star Wars. That's all that matters.
That is true. The Christmas special, even? Do we dare even say that to give away?
The
Arthur.
Kudos to you. Life Day is an amazing day to celebrate.
That's right. That's what that was. See, this is why I love you. You know these little things. That's great.
Well, and it is the first appearance of Boba Fett, so you can use that knowledge, too.
Yes, animated. I love that. Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing we wanted to briefly talk about, and we'll be really brief on this one, is was inspired by what you were referring to at the Comic-Con, the old school video game. I saw a picture of you playing Galaga, or something like Galaga, anyway. And it was great to see, and it got me thinking about how arcade games really have gone away, and it was a huge part of our growing up. We would go with Dad and drop $20 in the token machine and spend a few hours at the arcade playing various games. So just one or two of some of your favorite old school arcade games.
Old school Galaga by far is my favorite. I love that game. I didn't realize, don't get me wrong, I'm not breaking records like Billy Mitchell, but I didn't realize I was that good at it until other people who don't really do video games start playing it. And they're like, oh my God. I'm like, what? They're like, you got really far. And I'm like, I just play. I don't even notice. So I really love that game. I think that's great. And sort of newer old school, I think it was X-Men Battle of the Atom. I remember playing that.
Yeah.
I think it was even Summit Mall playing that.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was awesome. I love that game. Side scrolling, sort of, because it had its little slant where it was made it look 3D. Oh, love that game. That was so cool.
Yeah, that was in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles era game, those fighting, the scrolling background where you just kind of moved from left to right, battling bad guys as you went along to face the main boss towards the end and all that jazz.
Yeah, I had forgotten
about that one. One of the first really Marvel games that was pretty highly popular. Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I had forgotten about that. My favorite old school game is Centipede. I love Centipede.
Yeah.
I love the rollerball, and using that to move your ship around was just was a fun thing, especially as a kid. I do, however, remember several times pinching my hand in the rollerball thing, and that was smart sometimes. I think I was a little too overzealous in my video game play as a child. So
now,
got a chance to play that one again recently.
That game was there at Nerd HQ, and my question to you is, because I played it, do you cross your hands or do you play straight up? Because I've seen both, and I was not good at either way.
I just play straight up. I lefty on the rollerball and righty on shooting the laser. But when I played it again as an adult, I was embarrassed at how poorly I played that game. So maybe I should YouTube some other strategies on it or something like that.
We'll pretend you have advanced in your video game dumb. So to go backwards has really taken it out of you.
Yeah, That is completely inaccurate, but we'll go with that. We'll go with that. What I was most excited about it was it only cost a quarter, you know?
Yes.
It was only a quarter to play the game. So that was sort of exciting because that's not, if you do go to, you know, Dave and Buster's or any of the other things that are a semblance of what arcade, you know, an arcade place would be, it's nothing and a heck of a lot more expensive.
Yeah, it's so, like $5 to play a simulator or something. Like, oh my God, that's, no, we're not doing that.
Yeah, yeah. So let us know, listeners, what you think about both those topics. What are your favorite arcade games, and what order did you or would you show Star Wars?
Yes, please.
So let's move to family night. What kind of recommendation would you have for our nerdy family? Something that you think people should check out.
Why don't you go first? I got to think about this one.
Okay, all right. I will go first. Mine is 1 Second Every Day. It's an app called 1 Second Every Day, and what it does is it has a calendar, and you take video, and it takes a second from each day video and makes this sort of collage of it. So I used it. I have to admit, I stole this idea from seeing the movie Chef, which was one of my recommendations a few episodes ago.
Yep.
And they used it in that, and I thought, oh, that's cool. And so when we were on vacation, I thought, I'm going to use that app and make sure I tried to make sure I took some video every day. And if you don't take video every day, if you take pictures, you can use the picture instead. So it'll just be a picture instead of video for 1 second. But it was kind of a nice little montage. It was a nice little collage. It was pretty cool. So the app, I think, is only like $1.99 or something like that, and there's a knockoff version of it, too, that I would imagine is probably just as good. And it's just kind of a cool way to sort of capture the almost month-long vacation that we were on. So
yeah,
that's
cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Wish we'd had this a month ago before I went on vacation, because that's a great idea.
Yeah, well, if you took any video when you went on vacation and you get the app, it'll still sync it up because it does it by the timestamp. And that's the only tricky thing about it is that there were some days where I was like, oh, I took like 2 or 3 videos this day, and I didn't take any this day. I wish I could just move this video to this other day.
Yeah.
You can't do that. So that was about the only, you know, unfortunate thing about the way that it's set up. But you can get it to send you reminders to take video. And like I said, if you put a picture in there, it's just good. I mean, you know, it's only a second, so it's not that big of a deal.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, I would say that we had 2 plane flights that were about 5 hours each, and that's really long with a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah.
And on the way back, I had forgotten to add any new videos to the iPad. So we were kind of stuck with what we'd had and what we watched before, except for one that we haven't watched in a while that I always have on there because I'm a big fan. And I will preface this, it's the sequel only because I don't have a digital download of the original, or else I would have the original because I love the original. But it was Tron Legacy. It was a row of 3, and it was me, my son, and my daughter. So we put that on the iPad, and we have a splitter for the earphones, and we watched Tron Legacy. So I would highly recommend, if you have family night, go ahead and check out Tron Legacy with your kiddos. Again, my daughter's 5. She loves special effects. I think that's fun.
Yeah.
And I think it's very appropriate. There are, quote-unquote, violence, but it's digital violence, which people just break up into pixels. So I personally didn't feel that was too bad. But, yeah, that was a fun way to spend the 5-hour plane trip. We all got a kick out of that.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
So key to have entertainment. I know all parents already understand this.
Yes.
Have entertainment, whether it's a car ride or a plane ride or something. If it's any longer than 3 hours, you have to have some sort of movie or, like, my recommendation was that book on CD, you know,
yeah,
something that can occupy them so you don't have the, this is my side of the car.
Yeah. So you can keep your sanity.
Keep touching me. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's completely selfish motivation.
Yes.
So, yeah, absolutely. Well, good recommendation. All right. Thank you. How about the Nerd Cave, our adults-only, not-for-kids recommendation. Do you have one? Do you want me to start with one? Or?
I'll go ahead and take this one. I do have one. I have been watching Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm a big fan.
Oh,
it started
man.
really slow, but once you get through the first season, I think it's just amazing. And like you, I'm a bookworm. I love to read, and I knew the books were out there, and I've sort of been loath to read them because I'm not the biggest fantasy fan, and I was afraid that the written word would just turn more into fantasy than the show is. But I took a gamble. I bought the 5 books that are out. Started with the first one, burned through it because Allison wants to read them too, so I wanted to give her a chance while we were sitting on the beach to read it. Now I'm up to the 3rd book. It's awesome. It's amazing. It gives a lot more insight to the show.
Yeah.
But in sort of a twist, I'm a believer that the book is always better than the movie. But in a twist, there are a lot of scenes in the TV show that are better than the book, which I was surprised at. But the book just delves deeper into things. It tells things that didn't even happen in the TV show. I found I was able to understand relationships a lot better in the book, understand who was what and what they were doing in their title and role. So if you get a chance, read the book again. They are adults. Do not read them to your kids. If you do, I don't know why you would do that, but they are definitely for adults. But definitely read them. Don't listen on tape. I find that extremely lazy. I understand if you're driving to work long distance, whatever, and that's how you pass your time. Awesome. But I do feel, to get on my pulpit here, I do feel that the written word has lost its importance and people go to social media shortcuts and do, you know, FLM and all, or FML and all this, shake my head. And it's like, come on, look, use a problem,
You're turning into that. You're the crudgy old man there.
I know.
But I hear, hey, being an English teacher, believe me, I hear you.
Yeah.
One of my favorite books to teach is Fahrenheit 451, which is the whole thing is about how society crumbles because people stop reading. But I hear you. And I'll come to the defense of Book on Tape a little bit because, but you kind of hit it, and Book on TV, of course, not tape anymore. But a friend of mine, she has an hour commute into work. And that's how she read the Game of Thrones, was she listened to them on CD. And so I agree with you there. I think if you can, a book, you know, pages. I'm even old school where, like, I've read a couple of books on, you know, your iPad or Kindle or whatever. It's not the same, man. I just like the feel of the paper. So
It is. It's tough. And I will say, we did cheat, and I'm going to blame Allison because she's 5 years older than me. We got sort of the bigger version where the words are bigger, so you don't strain your eyes as much. So I recommend that, too, for our older listeners or like age listeners.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay.
Anywho, how about yourself?
Mine is a comic book that is currently in its 2nd issue. So if you haven't got this yet, you could probably get issues 1 and 2. It's put out by Image. It's called The Wicked Plus the Divine.
Ooh, yeah.
It's by the creators of another comic book that was pretty widely popular, or at least was a cult, you know, popularity, because I didn't know about it, called Phonogram. And I guess this is sort of related to that, but not like specifically intentionally, you know, a sequel or anything. But basically the idea is it's these gods are pop stars. So you have these sort of, you know, gods that we would have thought of as mythical, like Baal. Most of them seem to be sort of biblically relevant. And I haven't, like, memorized everything. But what I liked about it was that it made me look stuff up. I had to, like, go and look up that god or goddess's name and see where they, you know, from where they came. And so there's Egyptian and all kinds of different ones. And they've become these pop stars, and so people are, like, worshiping them, and their music is, you know, this sort of transcendental kind of experience. And then the plot line is basically, of course, one of them is Lucy, who is Lucifer incarnate. And she snaps her fingers and explodes somebody's head. and then she's being put on trial, and the judge's head explodes. And you can tell by the panel and the look on her face that she didn't do it. Like, she was threatening she would do it, but she didn't. And so then now it's this sort of kind of murder mystery in a sort of, it reminds me of Powers, Brian Michael Bendis in the 90s. That sort of a, like, superhuman kind of murder mystery kind of thing. And then the main character is this sort of, you know, lost teenager who has a bad home life, and she worships these pop stars, and she's going to try to help Lucy out here. So it's really kind of, it's unique. It's interesting. I love the art, and I like the writing. It's by, I got their names here. I hope I pronounce these right, because I'm the worst of them. Kieran Gillen, I think, or Kieran Gillen, and Jamie McKelvey. So those are, that's the writer and the artist.
Very cool.
So I recommend it. I think it's pretty entertaining. And like I said, it's only an issue 2. So that's always the thing for me. If something's an issue like 7 or 8, it's just so hard to try to jump into it.
Yeah.
And then it's also like, I got to go back and buy issues 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I can't do that. So if you're like me, hey, jump on this one while you can.
Very cool. I like that one.
Yeah. All right. Let's do parenting wins. Parenting wins. What, sir, is your parenting win for episode 9?
Well, I'm pretty proud of this one. It was a true parenting. I don't remember exactly what happened, but we were in North Carolina at the beach, and we were boogie boarding, I think it was. And James and he took a nasty spill. The waves were pretty big, and he took a nasty spill. And another wave came right after it and kept him under the water.
Ooh,
so he was a little scared.
Scary.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I probably picked him up, brought him out of the water, and was like, come on, big man, it's okay, no worries, you don't catch your breath and all that. And I walked him up to the beach and put the towel around him and all that, and let him just chill out for a minute. And he wasn't near me. And my dad, who was sitting right next to me, who, I love my dad, I think he's a great dad, I think he raised me just right, he looks at me and goes, you got to get him back out in the water. You got to get him on that horse and don't let him be afraid. I said, I understand that, Dad. I'm letting him choose to go back in the water because I think that's more powerful. If he chooses to do it on his own versus me telling him, I think that's a better way. I think he's going to learn more from that. And he looks at me and goes, well, what if he chooses not to? And I said, that's a gamble.
Yeah.
And almost immediately after we stopped talking, James comes up and goes, Daddy, I want to try again. And I'm like, okay, big man, let's go back out there. And my dad turned and goes, wow, good call.
Nice.
And I'm like, yeah, I was beaming. My own dad was proud of me. My son made the decision. I was like, man, this might have been pure luck. But I was really, really happy with myself that went that way. And he made the decision himself to go back out in the water. And it was not an easy one because, you know, I'm of that generation. You know, I think you're the same way where it's like, yeah, you got to get back out on the horse. That's what we were taught.
Yeah.
Get right back up. Can't be afraid. So I think it was a good decision. It was a tough one to make, I think. But I think it worked out well.
Yeah, sounds like it. Let me clarify yet again for our listeners that you and I do not talk about our parenting wins and fails before we come on. So
That's true.
So crazy when these correspond because mine is very much water-related and fear-related as well.
Interesting.
In Iowa. I know you don't think of lakes when you think of Iowa. Most people only think of corn when you think of Iowa.
Yeah.
It's called Holiday Lake. It's where I grew up, you know, swimming in that lake when I was a kid. And so Sabrina was and Cade were out there, and Cade loves jumping off the dock, and Sabrina has always been afraid to jump off of the dock for whatever reason. And so she finally this year jumped off the dock. And
awesome.
It was great. And she, it took her a while, you know, I'll admit. And I think it was the same kind of thing. It was like, you know, I could just throw her in, you know, and just be like, geez, was that so bad? But I thought, no, that's not going to be the right way to do this.
Yeah.
And so we just waited and waited and waited and talked to her about, you know, it's okay to be afraid, but not to let fear, you know, control, keep you from doing something that is, you know, it's fun and you see other people doing and it's safe. So, you know, just you can't let that keep you from it. And so eventually, and this is where the nerdy part comes in, we bribed her with a Powerpuff cookie jar that was my Nan. That's what we call her. She's really technically my great aunt, but we think of her as my grandmother. So she collected cookie jars, and she's been giving some of them, you know, away to the grandkids and stuff. And so he said, well, you can have this Powerpuff Girls cookie jar if you meet your goal. And it was already a goal for her. She wanted to be able to do this. So it, I say bribery, but it was more of like, you know, this is the reward, the motivation. And so
yeah,
that's what did it. And she really wanted that, and it did. She's very trepidatious. And so it did take some stages where I had to sort of set her into the water, you know, see, look,
yeah.
I drop you in, you got your life jacket on, you're not going to drown or anything like that. And then it ultimately, I almost sort of fooled her into it, where I ended up, you know, throwing her in, and then ultimately she was just jumping and didn't even realize it. And I'm like, see, now you're doing it. She's like, I am. So
that's awesome.
It's always great to have that as a dad, those and as a mom, those,
yeah.
Because, as you know, Megan was a part of this too, as those triumphant moments where you see your child overcome something that they were struggling with, whether it's
yeah.
jumping off a dock or going out into the ocean when they're getting hit by the waves or solving a math problem or whatever it is, it's great to see that.
Yeah,
good,
it is.
Good parenting wins. And listeners, we need your parenting wins. Jimmy and I are
yes.
starting to sound like we are Dr. Phil here or something. Like
I know.
We just have all the answers and we're such great people. And then we get to the parenting fails and then we wonder if we're going to get phone calls
yes.
from social services or something like that. No, but certainly the parenting wins. If you don't want to share parenting fails, believe me, we understand that. Although we've had a couple listeners that have done that and they've been awesome.
Yeah.
But share your parenting wins. We want to hear, we know you guys are doing cool stuff with your kids. So let us know what's going on.
Definitely. I agree.
All right. Parenting. Go
yes.
ahead. Sorry, dude.
No, I was just going to say, it takes us to the other side of the coin.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually we start with parenting fails. So that's my bad. I started with the wins.
Okay.
And it is better to start with the fails because then you finish feeling better about yourself. I'll start with the parenting fail because I admit last episode I totally copped out with Bruce Wayne as the father parenting
yeah.
fail. But I was on vacation and I was feeling good about myself as being a dad and taking my kids to places that I loved when I grew up. So that's what I'm using as my reasoning why. But I have to admit my parenting fail this year was involving one of my suggestions, and that was X-Men Alert, the board game.
Oh, no.
We probably played about, and this is the good side of the story, 30-something games of this board game. With
I saw a lot of
son.
Social media updates about
yeah.
this, too, by the way. So you
yeah,
are
they were very excited. They were, like, we were taking victory pictures when you won, you know, and stuff like that. And we had a deal that if anybody never left the starting place, which never happened, thankfully, had to take a picture of shame. So it was this whole fun thing, and we played and played. And it was great because, like I said when I was recommending this, it was three generations of Applegate playing this, you know, my
awesome.
Father, me, and then, you know, my kids all playing it. And then ultimately when my brother and his kids came out, they played it too. And so it's just sort of become this real cool, nerdy family tradition thing that we've been doing. Well, I have to admit that I had literally lost, and I'm not exaggerating here, 17 games in a row. I had not won 17 times in a row. And so this is game number 18, you know, coming down the pipes, or it would be 18 in a row. And I get Jubilee, who, if you don't know, is easily the worst character in all of X-Men. And
by
the game
far.
Is very accurate in its representation of that. And I don't remember who my other player was. But then there's also another card where you have someone leave your team. So then I had to, my player had to leave. So all I had was Jubilee. So it was like the worst thing possible, but I have to admit that I did not handle it well. That I basically was like, I tossed the card and I stood up and I was like, this is stupid. I can't. And I just kind of, I wouldn't go so far as to say I threw a fit. I do know that if my wife would have been sitting there, she would have rolled her eyes at the very least at me, if not had, you know, sharply called out my name and said, why are you, you know. But that is my parenting fail. I was a sore loser. I admitted it, and I told my kids afterwards, that I, you know, I'm sorry that I acted that way. And they were very compassionate and understanding. And in fact, my daughter had offered, well, Daddy, I'll take Jubilee. I'll trade you my player. And I was like, no, honey,
oh,
go
what
for
a
it.
Sweetheart.
I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah, she can be that way. She can also be like her daddy, though, too. Get upset when she has things that go, you know, against what she wants. And but yeah, so that was my parenting fail. Not my proudest moment.
Anytime you get Jubilee on your team, you have every reason to throw a fit. That is ridiculous.
It was bad. We do have a rule in our family that you cannot have Jubilee and Professor Xavier as your two starting characters. We've all universally determined that that is an abomination, that just is not fair in any way, shape, or form. So you get to trade in whichever of those two you don't want, and then get them back. Yeah.
That's
How about you, sir? What's yours?
Well, my parenting fail is physically painful to myself. Once again, we were at the ocean, and as you know from past episodes, I like to throw my kids in water. I don't know why. It's just something I do. And so in the ocean, it's a little different because I'm not on dry land. I'm actually out in the water. And as I mentioned, the waves are breaking, and we found it was pretty fun to throw the kids over the waves. Now, it was six kids, three of which don't count because they're too young, but it was six kids in that it was my sister's kids were there as well, so my nieces and nephews. We were just taking turns throwing three of them over the waves and got back to my son. And he wanted to try something new. He wore this, he has this vest, this life preserver, which has a shark fin on the back. And it's pretty cool vest, I will say that. But he wanted to do sort of a, put himself straight, and I was holding him on his tummy and his legs, and I would throw him over the wave like a dart. So he tried it once, and it worked, and he loved it. I'm like, I don't know why you like that, dude, but okay, because the normal way is just throw him like a cannonball over the waves as they're tucked up in a ball. So we get to about the third one of him doing that, and I threw him over, and obviously the number of times you throw, you get more tired, and the waves are pounding, you get more tired.
Yeah.
I pulled a back muscle, and it hurt so bad. Still, James was thrilled. He comes back. He's like, do it again, Daddy, and I'm sitting there in agony going, I'm sorry, buddy. I can't.
Daddy's got to lay down.
And this was like day three, so we're about halfway in the vacation. Daddy, throw me over the waves again. I'm like, I can't, big man. I'm so sorry. He's the oldest of the cousins, so, you know, younger cousins are like, hey, Uncle Jimbo, throw me over the waves again. I'm like, I can't. I'm so sorry. I can't do that. They're like, well, let's boogie board. I'm like, I don't think I can do that. It's still, as I drive into work and commute, it hurts just sitting there and sitting at my desk. I'm like, I don't know what I did, but I'm obviously an idiot and thinking I'm younger or whatever. But, man, I pulled something in my back, and it hurt pretty bad. And that is definitely a parenting fail on my part for not knowing when to say no.
Yeah, that's tough, though. That is tough.
Yeah.
Oh, crazy. Well, I think a good episode 9, not bad as far as time, too. I know that was something that we're going to do with future listeners is try to shorten our podcast by about at least 15 minutes or so.
Yeah.
But we had missed so many weeks, I felt like we got to cover what we wanted to cover. There was so much to talk about, so I really feel good episode. Everybody out there, let us know what you want to talk about. What's out there that's interesting to you? What not just our, you know, your parenting wins and fails, but if there's something you want us to talk about, let us know.
And let us know what you guys think of the format. Is this too long? Do you want it 15 minutes shorter? Do you like our parenting wins, parenting fails? Do you absolutely hate that we talk about something? Let us know. We want the feedback, please.
Absolutely, we do. Nothing better and getting feedback from our listeners. So
cool. And don't forget to check us out, nerdlocker.com, NerdLocker on Twitter, NerdLocker on Instagram, NerdLocker on Facebook, NerdLocker on YouTube. Check us out. Oh, and of course, Two Nerdy Dads on iTunes. Check us out at all these places and comment. Please, please, please. Have a nerdy week.